Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Millennial in the Middle. I'm Connor DeLynn. Today, I have someone on the show that had a lot of interesting experience and a lot of interesting thoughts that he's kind of figured out in the trenches working with people that I wanted to pick his brain on. His name's Cooper Campbell. He's a Gen Zer that is already serving as a consultant, helping people with relationships and business and, you know, not a life coach, but just kind of all of that together in a cool way. And he learned so much as he's been training and working with a lot of people like just out of high school, that he has some pieces in tune to how, you know, the younger generations think and how that ties in with, you know, the previous generations that I thought was worth having on the show. The other thing is you'll see toward the end of the show, a lot of his purpose and a lot of what he does is work with those who have, either suicidal ideation or have thought through that concept or maybe considered that alternative. And it's something I haven't really talked about on the show very much. It's not something that's a fun topic or something that I think we can bring up lightly. But at the end of this conversation, you'll hear some of his experiences in dealing with people that have thought that way, that have, you know, some of them acted out on it. And some of his feedback there and things, the insights that he gained, I think might be beneficial to the listeners. So I wanted to share this interview with you. This is Cooper Campbell. You can follow him on social media or wherever it might be. But I think he's going places. So give this guy a follow. Here we go. Cooper Campbell, how are we doing?
I'm doing fantastic today.
This is probably the first time I've had someone on the show that's almost as blonde as me.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm looking over here at like a blonde hair, kind of greenish blue eyes. I'm going, am I looking in the mirror in this episode right now?
We both went with the blue jacket, the kind of, you know, navier vibes. So
of course, we know what our colors are.
Right. We know what makes our eyes pop, all of those things.
Well, thanks for coming on. We've had a lot of conversations that I think would be really helpful to bring in light in this show. And the first place, I want to start with something that I feel like the two of us, from what I've seen you post, may be in a bit of disagreement on.
Right.
You have advocated for like polarities and being extreme and these absolutes, which this is millennial in the middle. Like I'm opposed to that. Like let's find the middle. Let's find balance. So I guess I'm just going to start putting you right in the hot seat. Like explain yourself. What do you mean?
I feel far more comfortable in the hot seat than I do in any other seat, to be honest. So I appreciate that as someone would who has very radical ideas. For me, I think the reason that I put so much stock into radical ideas is because I've had so much experience with being able to get the healthiest forms of communication, right? And so for me, I've been able to see that two very radical ideas, if they can come to common ground and maximize both and totally prioritize both concepts, that's when you get really evolutionary concepts to be kind of born, right? Is when it's too very polar, too very aggressive. You know, you've got two very different ideas that come together to form one thing that gets the best of both, right?
But is that realistic? I mean, if you look at those things that are opposite of each other, most of the time you would think that there has to be some sort of compromise, which I a lot of times explain is coming to the middle. So is that to have two things at once in your mind, is that like a middle mentality or do you see it something else?
Let's see if I can articulate this well. When it comes to the two very different ideas coming together, the challenge of it, right, is you need to have both of them totally and completely be heard and seen, right? And totally be prioritized, right? Like you've probably heard people talk about it in marriage and relationship concepts where it's not about being 50-50 in a marriage. It's about being 100-100, right?
My mom told me that lots of times.
right. And it's a really, really unique challenge if your communication skills are lacking, right? If somebody's incredibly emotional just because they're priorities aren't met perfectly, that's when you have these very inflammatory, negative situations, right? For me, I view it a lot like a basketball team. A point guard and a center have very different roles and responsibilities. They have very different expectations every time they come on the court. The way they support the other is completely opposite, right? Like one sets screens so that they open the other up. It's supposed to be a very mutualistic relationship, but if you come together and try to make them as the exact same as possible, you're actually doing a really bad thing. It's really negatively impacting it. And so the way that I talk about when it comes to, let's say, millennial in the middle, right? We actually want you to be that perfect hybrid blend of both, right? Mm-hmm. That's what puts us in the best thing. But when I'm the aggressive Gen Z, if I can't even remember if I am Gen Z.
You're on that bubble.
I identify with them. So, kid. Right.
Well, you're definitely a Gen Z if you're using the word identify, right? I identify as a Gen Z. Forget about the dates.
Right, exactly. And so for me, there's just, you want people to figure out who and what they are as aggressively as possible, because that's how they're unique. Like a lot of the times, if I am Gen Z, we say things like diversity is our strength, right?
Yeah.
There's so much of that when it comes to skin color, creed, all these different things where they focus on those things. But in my opinion, so much of the diversity is our strength is when it comes to the differences between each type of person. And so for me, so much of my belief is that everybody has different roles that they need to play in society. Your job and my job, when I originally came across your content, I went, this guy's my competitor. I went, this is a guy who did everything the right way, and so he's able to talk about these concepts. This is my competitor.
Yeah.
But then after I really looked into it, I was paying attention to the things you put out. You're way more somebody who starts healthy conversations. You bring back so much aggressiveness and allow the emotion to kind of be something that's directional, right? For me, I want the emotion to be as high as possible, but as disciplined as possible, because that's where all of a sudden you can actually experience real growth, and it's in the places you want it to go.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And I want to point out you making that comment of like coming across me and your first initial thoughts like, oh, this is a competitor. But I really think the Gen Z mentality and millennials is more of a spirit of abundance.
Right.
That, you know, we know that there's so much to go around now when it comes to ideas and success and wealth, like whatever it might be, that I feel like there's way less of this feeling of competition. And right. What is happening today is what that leads us to, right? Like, right. Well, how can we work together? How can we find this? And so that's why, you know, when you kind of approached it that way, I'm like, yeah, let's have a conversation. Let's talk through this. Now, I want to talk about something you said really interesting there is being able to find out who you are. Right. And I think this is what younger generations are probably being more intentional about than any other generation we've ever seen, of like who they are, what matters to them, what are their values. And so how do you see that as a part of this conversation?
Well, so I actually have the quote ready to go. I'm well prepared.
Okay.
So there's a Benjamin Disraeli quote. He was a British prime minister, and he said, "The greatest good you can do for another is not just share your riches, but to reveal to him his own." Hmm. And for me, that's what my consulting practice is really revolved around.
Yeah.
Is I don't want somebody to try to be more like Cooper. That's a loss for me and for them, because they're not going to be able to compete with me. I've been being Cooper for years. I'm really good at it. I've put in all the hours. I'm an expert on it. I've put in the 10,000 hours, you know, like they say.
Yeah.
And so for me, that's where I try to really reveal to somebody their own riches. And then how do I maximize that? Hmm. When it comes to things like, I really had a lot of thoughts beforehand to talk a lot about inheritance, because I was over the week, I'm doing my preparation for this. And I paid attention to, there was somebody talking about how millennials have the smallest share of any generation of the wealth when it comes to the age group that they're in. They only own like 4% of the wealth right now. And they're very bitter about it, right? You know, I can't buy a house. I can't buy this. I can't buy all these things, right? But then the problem with that is you have to look at that and understand that means you've been the children of the people who have the most wealth of any generation ever. So at what point do you look in the mirror and go, well, how come none of this wealth has really transferred? How come, you know, why aren't we getting in these positions? And what things in ourselves are we not confronting to be able to do this? I could go on and on for hours about all of the kind of things I pay attention to when it's like, you get more and more people complaining about housing costs and things like all of these things, inflation, all the economics of it all, right? when the best case for so many people is it's like, you have to hold yourself accountable to grow into those things. And so many of them just retreat from it, is my opinion. I see so many people who just go, that's totally unattainable for me. So much of that has to do with their relationship with their parents, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. So many of the generation, especially millennials and Gen Z, they have had very little opportunities to do things that are truly theirs and take ownership of things to an extent where I can fail healthily. Mm-hmm. That's one reason why I view that there's so much of a gap between economics and responsibility of these things, right? Mm-hmm. Is because there's one generation who has had to be their own people for such a long time. And then they've now raised the group of kids who have no idea who and what they are.
Yeah.
They have no idea how to deal with healthy failure. Mm-hmm. Growth is largely foreign to them unless it's clearly pathed out, clearly charted out. And they have very little capability of really understanding themselves. I have another quote for that one.
I think that's such a good point, because I love talking about, you know, so many millennials are born into situations where it's like, failure isn't even an option, right? Like, you've been set up for success in so many different ways. And a lot of us come around and we screw it up, right?
Right.
And so, you know, when you talk about inheritance, obviously there's the financial side of that. But from a like work ethic standpoint and values, like, what do you think this generation that you found, like, what are they inheriting that's beyond just money that is maybe good or bad?
Right. Well, to start, if you go look at the world poverty rate, it has dropped significantly since the 1950s.
Sure.
So the first thing is the majority of this generation has food.
Yeah.
And that is completely, up until the 1960s, it was over 99% of people were born into poverty. Mm-hmm. Guaranteed, that's how it was, right?
Yeah.
So we'll start with there. Survival is easier, right?
Yep.
But when it comes to the good things, I'll start talking more of the positive things. I've been pretty critical.
But
when it comes to the positive things, they have access to information due to technology in ways that have never happened, right? And so for the people who do charter off onto their own course, they have a vast amount of resources in order to accomplish the life that they want. If your parents have certain flaws and weaknesses, you have never had more access to a larger community that can help you learn how to get out of those things. Hmm. That's one of my huge things that I work with my clients on, is I just go, look, yeah, your parents weren't perfect. They didn't do a great job at XYZ, but you can easily go learn all of the skills you need. For me, I realized I was not a responsible kid growing up.
Yeah.
I woke up late every day. You know, I was pretty lazy. I never cared about school. Never. Yeah. My grades were basically how good was my teacher. That was the grade I got.
Yeah.
Because I never applied myself to it. And so what I did was I went and lived with my uncle, really successful Korean family. It's my, mom's sister's brother or husband, my uncle. Yeah, I described that well. And I said, he will understand discipline in a way that I have never understood it, because I can't charm him. Because I realized, I was like, I have always been able to just get out of working hard because I was likable. Mm-hmm. People wanted me to succeed. I was friendly. I always paid attention to how people felt, all of those things. And so I said, I need to go and learn from somebody who I can't just be charming to get out of trouble.
Yeah.
And I lived with him in California for about 3 years. I woke up basically every morning at 5:30, went to bed basically every day at 10. I've never accomplished more in my life than when I lived at his house. And it was because discipline was just the baseline expectation. Mm-hmm. And I'm fortunate to have people like that really close that I can go to. But that's the joy and the beauty of technology right now, is those resources are available to everybody.
Yeah. It's really interesting, because to me, it brings up this concept of upward mobility, right? Of, if you have so many people that are born below the poverty line and just never really felt like they were set up for success, it's really, really hard to overcome that. And it was hard to find a circle of influence that was outside of like what you felt like you just were, you know, exposed to at a young age or throughout your coming of age years. And I think through that concept that you just talked through, I think there's so much validity in the fact that today the ball's in your court way more of who do you want to listen to? How do you apply yourself? And I mean, would you agree with me if I were to ask, do you feel this generation has fewer excuses than any generation before? Wow, did I just stump you? That was pretty impressive.
No, I'm really careful when it comes to answering a question like that. I don't think so. I'm going to take the opposite opinion on this, because one of the things that I've done a lot of work to study is how often does a generation convince themselves that this is the only time this is happening, this is unique circumstances. And from my studies, even though I talk very positively about technology right now, I mean, you've heard me, there are just incredible resources, right? But if you go, let's just stick to the last 300 years, that statement is true of every generation that has lived in the last 300 years, that technology had never been better for you to be successful. You've never had more access to a larger community, right?
True.
And so I that's why I really like talking about inheritance with people, is because the variance right now is really polarized, right? You either have this incredible wealth at your disposal, or you have nothing and no access to it. And so when it comes to excuses for not accomplishing things, maybe I'm not the right person to ask that question to, because I don't even comprehend excuses. I just can't, like, and I don't want that to come off in a self-serving way, but it's just there are so many reasons to end up where you end up, right? And one of my favorite things that I tell people is that there's nobody who didn't get what they wanted out of life. It's just true. Everybody has gotten what they wanted. If they sacrificed everything for it, they got it. It's true. It's the baseline of life.
So bad luck isn't a thing?
Well, I think there's certainly bad luck. But when it comes to sacrificing all for it, like, there, nobody, and you could go, what about the kid who's like, I want to be an NBA player, right? That's all I want.
Yeah.
There are sacrifices you can make, but then there are sacrifices that aren't available to you, right? I can't be 6'5 tomorrow.
Sure.
And so there's some genetic information in it. And it's why I really like doing the work that I do, is because I help people to understand, all right, this is what we have right now, and the place we can start from, right?
Yeah. So I want to talk through that process. First off, I want to ask a question. Like, what's interesting about this generation now too is, I mean, I was kind of raised with the concept of, like, people that you would turn to and look to needed to be those that had gray hair, right? And had been through experiences before. And it was like the fact that this person had 40 more years of life experience under their belt made them more valuable, especially with, like, business consulting, for example. You know, like, I was a great speaker at 21 years old, but I didn't have any successes necessarily I could point to and go speak on. But what's interesting is, like, you started into your career as a consultant. And I mean, one, that takes some guts there to put yourself on the line and do that. But how do you feel like you're qualified to do that because you don't have gray hair?
Right. I think that's a really good question. And it's one that I've had to wrestle with.
Yeah.
A part of it is I just looked at my life and I just kind of said, what do I want the writing to be? You know, what do I want the story to have been?
Yeah.
Did I do everything that the previous generation told me to do? Because I have mentors who could have laid out the path perfectly. I could have gone and worked for them. I've been offered a CEO position of a company. Like, I'm not somebody who just went, I don't have anything going on, and this is what I want my life to be. I've worked incredibly hard to be where I am. And so that's the first thing to kind of qualify yourself is, did you work really hard regardless of who was giving you direction on it, right? And that's where a lot of my qualification comes in. And then the other question I had to ask myself, because I think the same way, right, is what problems am I trying to solve? A large percentage of the problems I'm trying to solve are the exact failings of the previous generation, right? That's where I'm going to make a ton of my money. And so the previous generation can't really help me on that because they're the cause of those problems. Mm-hmm. They can't even identify, how come my kid behaves this way? Or how come the next generation does this? It's why I loathe listening to, like, these older mentors go on podcasts and criticize the previous generation. Mm-hmm. They're so out of touch with it. They have no idea what a kid actually has gone through.
Yeah.
In order to learn self-identify, like, that stuff is incredibly challenging. If you didn't have a lot of inheritance in that route, right? So for me, one of the reasons why I feel so passionate about these things is because so much of who my dad and my grandpa are so meaningful. They're so purpose-driven. I gain so much credibility in my own eyes because I'm a Campbell. Mm-hmm. I know so many kids who don't feel that way about the previous generation. They go, my dad provided for me. That was all. And that's really sad. And I'm sure that there's a lot of conversations that haven't been had as far as the other sacrifices parents have made. But there's a huge percentage of this generation that just goes, they don't really mean anything.
Sure.
And that's why I feel so impassioned to do this in a way that's not based on the previous generation. It's me actually catering to this generation in a very ironic way because the previous generation helped me with it. Hmm. My grandpa's name's Glenn Campbell. He's not the famous singer. But in my eyes, he's a far better man. Far fewer people will know who Glenn Campbell was than Glenn Campbell, the singer. And yet my grandfather's impact on people, and it then went to my dad, the same exact impact in a very different person. And I feel like a lot of what my work is I just translated a lot of their skills and I've sold it.
Yeah. It's really interesting. I mean, I think we're all a product of the generations before. And I think there's no point in trying to judge others of the past because they were faced with different challenges, right? Different things. They thought different way. They were raised differently, right? And so I want to know, as you start these sessions, like consulting with someone, it seems like that would have to start, if you've got someone that's like your age coming to you, that's got to start with just a desire to learn and a willingness to be humble.
Right.
And so do you find that that's a common theme? Like, in what state do people come to you?
Yeah, this is a really fun question for me to answer. The concepts that I talk about, if it resonates with you, you almost definitely hire me. And the reason I use the term resonate is because, in my opinion, so much of consulting is very logical and rational. Mine's very emotional. Mine's very tied.
I'm not surprised by that.
Right. I mean, I'm trying to represent a generation that has had a hard time figuring out its emotions. So I like the word resonate a lot for it. Mm-hmm. And so it was really hard for me in the beginning to figure out how to sell it because I was trying to sell it to the previous generation. But if I talk to some kid, I mean, I've got 19-year-olds that hire me that want to figure out where they want to end up, that are paying me out of their own pocket, you know, like punk kids,
yeah,
that really have no business hiring a consultant.
Sure.
And I look at them, I give them money back guarantees because I'm like, I don't want you to come away from this and feel like this guy convinced me to buy snake oil, right?
Yeah.
And so for me, what I have to do so much of is understanding the person first and then getting them to figure out how to articulate where they want to end up, right?
Yeah. I think it's really interesting because it's kind of like this hybrid mixed side of like a therapist, a life coach, yeah, a business consultant, right? And I mean, all of those mindsets, I think it's part of this like living life more balanced. You know, you don't have a business coach and then a relationship coach and keep all those areas of your life separate. Like, I think there's some value in saying like, this is my person that helps me get through stuff and I can talk about anything, whether that's relationships, how I feel about myself, my self-worth, my business. And I think there's a completeness to that that I think is really nice. I want to know, how do you get to know that person? Like, what do you do to see what makes them tick?
Most people are happy. I mean, thrilled to give you all of that data.
Yeah.
It's really simple. And a lot of it is just being comfortable asking questions. For example, one of my clients, he would tell people that he wanted to start a gym and he wanted to be Mr. Olympia. But he would start with, I want to start a gym because that's, you know, palatable. People can go, oh yeah, that's something like that's reasonable. You don't have to do steroids to own a gym or to own a gym. There is just a way easier barrier for entry than being the best in the world at something, right? And so when we initially had our conversation, I look at him and I just go, all right, if you have to pick one or the other, what do you pick? He didn't even hesitate. He told me exactly what he wanted, Mr. Olympia. And so as soon as I get the owning a gym out of the picture, because that's what a lot of people do, they'll put smoke screens up because social proof is so, so overrated right now. The Instagram, all the social media has really done a lot of that, right?
Yeah.
Where it's just prove this socially or don't talk to me about this, right?
Yeah.
And I'm very against that. And that's basically what I do first is I just go, what are the things you say that are only for social proof?
Yeah.
And as soon as I've got that out of the way, everything just spills out. I mean, people really want to be understood.
Interesting. So if I were to summarize that, to me, it's about vision. Like what you're looking at there is how do people visualize a happy life? And what does that look like for them? And do you find those answers are just as unique as the people that are sitting in front of you? Or do you see common themes with these younger people you're talking to?
A lot of the time, the vision for the end goal isn't super unique.
Yeah.
But the application of a lot of the concepts that I teach them are, it's the thing that I'm most grateful and respectful of is the fact that when I work with a client, all of a sudden they start to understand themselves even better than I do. And they start to self-correct. They start to work on their relationship with their parents in ways I never would have known. It becomes a process where I get to be just as encouraged about a person as they are. And there have been multiple times at this point in my journey where a client has said to me, I can actually see how I'm going to get to my goals now. And I know I'm going to be able to do it. And I'm an incredibly grateful person. I struggle to even talk about that sort of a thing because it's so precious and it's so, there's so much value to that, that, I mean, it's honestly something that parents deserve the opportunity to experience. And I'm just some lucky idiot who gets to be there too.
Yeah. So you help a lot of these young people find their why and help put them on the path, which I think is, you know, is super, super valuable.
Right.
And as you do that, what have you found? I know we've talked about a lot of the positive things for, you know, millennials, Gen Z. What do you think are some of their weaknesses or drawbacks or common areas that you're seeing people need to work on?
Perfectionism and impatience.
I'm like check and check as you're going through those. I'm like, oh no.
That's one of my first things that I do is I have to figure out how you do goals. Do you set an insane goal and you never accomplish it?
Yeah.
Or do you set these easy goals that you, this is nothing, right? And so what I essentially do is I essentially set like 3 vision goals with them where I go like, this is absolutely impossible. This is really doable. And this is tough, but you know, like, I could probably figure it out. If I can hit that first goal, then I can get to this, right?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, all 3 become really easy, right? Because you just put them on the right path. Once again, people want to solve these things on their own. People don't want to rely on me for everything. They don't want to hire a sales team. They want to be good at sales.
Sure.
Like a lot of my clients are videographers and content creators. They really want to be good at all the aspects of it. They just don't see how to do it. And so once you put somebody into kind of the slipstream, the current of it, they start to do most of it on their own, right?
Yeah. Well, personally, I'm curious here, like, where do you see this taking you with your vision, your life? Like, I love just this desire to get in and help people, empower, put people on the right path. Do you think you'll do this forever? Like, where do you want to go with this?
Right. I think there's a lot of business aspects to this. I would really like to, in 30 years... I would like to have dictated a lot of what a business environment looks like.
Yeah.
To where people actually, they don't feel alienated by the spaces that they spend the majority of their time in. Right. That's something I definitely see as a lane for this, but it's kind of the cool part for me and for all my clients. I don't really have to know because the opportunities that come, my sister, actually, she was talking to a friend about what I do and the way that she came to terms with it was she was like, look, Cooper's incredibly opportunistic while maintaining really high discipline throughout the whole thing. And so the way that I view it is I just go, the right opportunities will present themselves. I have to be ready for those. Even though I can't see them, I don't know where they're going to take me. And I'm going to share a quote with this as well, because this is one of my favorite. His name's Frank Herbert. He wrote Dune.
Okay.
Let me find it. I have a whole page of quotes. I could charge a lot of money for them. I kind of do. Frank Herbert there. I'm getting close to it.
This guy came prepared. I love it.
The future remains uncertain, and so it should, for it is the canvas upon which we paint our desires. Thus, always, the human condition faces a beautifully empty canvas. We possess only this moment in which to dedicate ourselves continuously to the sacred presence which we share and create. And
why do you love that so much?
Oh, it's just so much of my soul. I love that I can't tell you what my future looks like, because I want to experience it beautifully with the people that I care about and love, you know?
Yeah.
I couldn't have 6 months ago when I started my business told you anywhere where I'd end up.
Yeah.
I couldn't. And it was so hard because everybody wanted social proof. And I just kept being like, I can't make this more of what you think it should be. I have to make it more of what I think it should be and what my skills and what my strengths are that I bring to the table, you know?
Yeah.
And the main thing that I bring to the table is I understand myself better than other people do.
Yeah.
And because of that, I'm able to understand others better than they understand themselves. Mm.
I think that sequence is, you know, not a surprise, right? You have to start with that personal self-awareness before you're, and then that immediately will affect your relationships and the way you connect with others. I think it's cool for you to be able to say, hey, I don't know what my future looks like. And that's actually pretty exciting.
Right.
Because I think for a lot of people, like where we feel more anxiety than anything else is when our reality doesn't match up with expectations. Right. And so talk to me a little bit about, I know you find as you talk to people, like a lot of anxiety, a lot of depression, self-esteem issues. Like how is that hard to watch that? And what have you learned?
When it comes to watching that in another person, it's not things that I haven't experienced. I mean, I've had anxiety. I've had 2 panic attacks in my life. But for me, watching these things in another person is, it's kind of exciting because like I said, I've dedicated a lot of my life to this. A lot of my clients don't understand. I probably spent about 10 to 15 years of working through these concepts. And even though I always had other things I was working on, I mean, I had a commercial real estate job. I've done a myriad of things.
Sure.
I always kind of had my eye on this, right? I knew I was going to eventually figure something out along these lines. And so I always paid attention to those things in others. And anxiety and depression can be freeing once you start to understand it within yourself a little, and don't resent it.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are people who I would never market myself as somebody who solves depression and anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
But that's also where it comes to the beautiful part of not understanding the future is we don't understand all of the current circumstances we're in, and simply allowing ourselves to deal with the ebbs and flows of life without being bitter, it makes it so much more beautiful, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I have grown up in Draper, Utah. I've watched many of my friends get married. I'm still single. I've dated wonderful people throughout my life. I've always viewed marriage as such a high, amazing goal. I'm not in any way disheartened by the time it's taken me to find the right partner, right? Because the ebbs and flows of life, when I do have the right partner, it's going to be the most beautiful thing. I've told some of my friends, I'm like, you guys have to be careful. If I marry this girl, I'm probably going to just disappear. Because I don't really want a whole lot of things other than to have my bills paid and to have a happy wife and happy kids. And that's so much of my work with the previous generation is helping them to understand that it's like happy family. There's just nothing better. And it's actually a lot easier to attain than you think. You've just focused on the wrong things.
I think that's only in Utah would you hear a 26-year-old be like, it's just taken me so long to date. So yeah, to my listeners outside of Utah, yeah, this place is crazy.
And
it's
I only say that in those terms because of the
100%,
fact that we
have right?
That shared,
and that,
that
creates
way.
Anxiety for a lot of people though, right? Because
right?
there's a reality and an expectation.
Right.
And when you're told, hey, this is what you have to do, all these steps become scary fast. I know one of your whys has been around the topic of suicide. It's a hard thing to talk about, right? And I want to do it in the right spirit here today, which I think we can do. But I want you to tell me why that's been something that has made such an impact on you and been a part of what you do.
Right. I alluded to it a little bit early on, where so much of my life's purpose, I learned paying attention to my dad and my grandpa, right? Both of them were incredibly purpose-driven people. It filled their lives full of meaning, you know? My grandpa, he sold everything. I mean, that was what he did for work. And so, I mean, was that his life's purpose? Was he a salesman? I mean, some people might say he was, because he was an incredible salesman. I mean, he was great. But there was a theme in his life where everybody who ever came through his life felt like they were his favorite of whatever they were.
Mm-hmm.
And all of his grandchildren will tell you, I felt like I was his favorite grandkid, right? Sure.
It's a great trait.
My dad, very similar, but also very different. Where my dad's a little bit more reserved and less salesman, and is very like, you come to me. My grandpa was very, hey, I'll bring the truth to you. Whether you know, if you're sitting at home, I'll come in and I'll tell you what the truth is. You know, that was a little bit more how Glenn operated. And so I've been born in such a meaningful environment, and the reason I'm so passionate about helping people with suicidal ideations. And I've been able to do it multiple times where I've been able to help people to develop the skills to get away from those ideations, is the fact that there's so much that meaning provides for an individual's psychology and their soul. And like I've said, I don't see the future for myself. I don't need to. It's really a faith-based way of living, where I just go, I'm going to blindly walk towards where I want. And I know meaning will be on the other side, right? I know that all of these things will work out for me. So because I live that way, it becomes really obvious and apparent to me when somebody's missing that. And I became really aware when my grandpa died that so much of what I've inherited are things I did nothing to deserve. I didn't deserve the incredible grandparents I had on both sides of my family. My parents, I did nothing to be born in such an amazing, loving home, right? And because of that, I'm so willing to share those same concepts with people, where it's like, you have to understand, you don't usually deserve all of the awful things, and you also don't usually deserve all of the really good things in your life. And so when it comes to helping somebody out of those things, those are some of the concepts that really helps with that, where it's like, you can't look at life as so cement and everything that you've done is punishment or reward.
Mm-hmm. It's really interesting. Why suicide? Like, what do you see people like with suicidal ideation and moving that way? Like, what point does a person have to be to feel like that's the best course of action, to feel like that is something that they should even consider, let alone do?
Right. Right. I think it's different in boys and girls. And my experience has largely been with men on this.
Mm-hmm.
So much of it for men is, a lot of the times they accurately look at their lives, realize that they're not super happy. There's not a lot of meaning. They don't sacrifice a lot. And they feel very alien. And so a part of why I feel so comfortable in this is, I feel it's kind of like a firefighter watching fires happen. I have the skills. This is an innate part of who I am to help these people.
Mm-hmm.
And so I can't look at the fire and not try to fix it. I can't stand idly by. It's something that some of the people that I'm closest with have struggled with. One of the big motivators for me is, one of my best friends called me after he almost did.
Mm-hmm.
And I was the only person he felt like he could talk to. And so much of the things that I did with him and conversing with him afterwards was, I didn't try to fix it. I didn't try to convince him he was wrong. I don't think I've even verbalized yet to him the things that I thought in that moment and the hurt that I felt, because it would have been selfish for me to do that. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But like, it's one of the things that I feel very connected to when it comes to this sort of thing, is because he had given me a gift that with the journey that I've chosen, I mean, we've talked about it. I don't do social proof very often. I can't rely on a ton of opinions. I can't, people believing in me can't really see where I'm going to end up because I can't. And he was one of the people who was in the trenches with me and believed in me. And it was a part of why I feel so passionately about this is because I feel so grateful that I don't have to tell people about who he was. I get to still introduce him to them. Mm-hmm. And I still get to have that joy of having somebody who relied on me and incredibly, you know, once again, it just feels so unique and special to me that he viewed me as a leader and viewed me as a friend in those things that I have to offer the same thing to other people.
Yeah.
I can't look at my life and go, I was fortunate to have my friend survive. And then I did nothing with it and just sat and enjoyed my riches, right? Like, I have to save other people from this. And that includes the family members and friends of people who have gone through that sort of a thing.
Sure.
Who have lost somebody, you know? Like, there's hurt that they don't know how to articulate. That's a part of what I do. And, you know, as I get further along in my career, as my stability increases, I'll be able to really pursue those paths. But it's just so much of it has to do with my gratitude towards what I have and what I've inherited, right?
Sure. Two questions I want to ask on that, because I think it's really cool to hear your experiences through that and then how that's led you to have other conversations and you being put in a place where you can practice on that. What would you say to someone first who has dealt with someone very close to them who has either had those ideas or talked about it? Like, what advice would you give to them? Or maybe this is something that happens to someone a few years down the road and they listen to that podcast anew. Like, what would you tell them?
Let me make sure I understand the question correctly. My advice is to the person who's struggling with it or the people who are trying to support the person?
Trying to support. That's it. I have two questions, so I'm going to ask you both sides. Right. Let's start with the supporter first.
Well, a part of the supporter has to remove their own personal hurt from it for a time. Mm-hmm. It's something that can be discussed, in my opinion, but for a time you have to let that scared child not feel like they're going to be in a position of punishment for it, right? And so much of it has to do, then you have to be able to communicate those things to the person, right? One of the things that I've really come across, right, with these scenarios that I've been in is I've realized it's like, I could sacrifice everything else in my life to go and try and save this person. And that makes it worse. Hmm. That makes that person feel more guilty. That makes that person feel more alien. And there are times where increasing it, and it's so individual. That's one of the really hard parts of it. Is it so unique to the individual? Because as soon as I started saying that, I was like, well, there are circumstances where you do need to go in and rescue a person, right? And so a part of it is, that's why removing yourself from it's so important, right? Mm. Is you don't write in the moment, put all my emotions, that person will know what they actually need, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's what my friend communicated to me. He was like, I don't need you to come drop everything, come and live with me. Let's check in once every night for the next couple of weeks.
Yeah.
And we did that, right? Mm. And it's so much about putting it more on their terms and helping them to articulate those things, because that's also going to help them to identify how much you care about them, right?
Yeah.
Because not making it your thing is incredibly validating to the individual, right?
Yeah.
And that's true no matter whether you're high self-esteem or low self-esteem. If I don't make this about me, you're going to feel better and that it's about you.
Yeah. Let's ask that second question now. So to people who have had those thoughts or those doubts, or maybe they've even gotten to the point of ideation or trying it, like, what would you say to them?
I'm going to emphasize again, men and women, it looks kind of different when it comes to the actual ideations, right? My advice to a girl who's struggling with it is she needs to find people who make her feel safe. And that's the first place you need to go. Who are people who make me feel safe? That's the number one thing for girls who are struggling with it. When it comes to guys, this has been a really unique kind of experience for me. I don't want people to think that I view this as Bible. This is still very, I don't have access to all the data on these things. These are things that I'm not totally like, this is a guarantee, right? But my experience with it has been a lot of the times they look at their lives and they look at things kind of accurately, but they look at it as cement. So for example, my friend was single. He hadn't been in a meaningful relationship in years. His roommate was a friend, Saul. His relationship with most people was really shallow, and his family was falling apart, right? Mm-hmm. And then he got more and more negative news. And so he kept going, what is the reason of going through all these things? I'm in immense pain, and there's no place for me to make this point, like make this have a purpose to it. And so in my discussions with him was, I just said, look, like, your brain's not entirely wrong. And that should be freeing, because you're not somebody who's experienced this one-off. You're not in this awful. You need to focus on things that will make you feel like it's worth living. And that looks like risk. That looks like pushing yourself. That looks like growth. But if you just sit there and go, well, I've attained some level of competence at XYZ, I'm not going to push myself on anything else, it tends to just kind of beat you down. Now, there are other people, there are people with families who have different relationships to it. I know of one girl who her dad committed suicide. I don't feel nearly as confident talking about a situation like that, right? But that's been my experience with this younger generation. When they don't have a lot of meaningful pieces in life, that's kind of what it looks like for me.
Yeah. So you have to go about creating those. I think it's really good advice. I think it's a topic that, you know, isn't fun to talk about, but it's needed.
Right.
And I think it's really important that there are people out there in positions like yourself that are helping others, you know, see the light at the end of the tunnel and go to those places. And so kudos to you for not only your passion that you feel about that and how much you care, but actually going out and doing something about it.
And I am going to correct that a little bit. It's not even seeing the light at the end of the tunnel. It's just believing that it's there.
Yeah.
Because I can't necessarily go in and say everything is going to work out because of XYZ. I'm not going to be able to clear a path for you. You've got to do that work when you're going through something like that. But you have to recognize that it can be there. That there is a path to get out of those things, because that's where they get into the cement of it. They don't even believe that there is a world in which they feel good and happy about things. And so if I can confront that sort of a thing, I'm in a much better place when it comes to talking with somebody, because then all I have to do is start assigning them, all right, these are things that we're going to do over the next couple of months. Those are going to be our success or failure indicators. If we do them, you'll start to feel these things. If you don't do them, we'll know. We need to go back to the drawing board and figure out how you're going to do them. And so you don't get to DEFCON 5, right?
Yeah.
So
I think it's cool. And it takes a certain, I mean, I can see as you say that there's a certain amount of like authority in your voice. It's like, no. We've got to snap out of this right. And make a change right now. And I think that's really cool. Thanks so much for coming on. I enjoyed this conversation. I think there's a lot of different tidbits that people might be able to take out of here, and hopefully they find some meaning. And best of luck to you on your path and your journey and in helping other people on their own. I end every show with the theme song of the show. I didn't warn you about this, so you're more than welcome to join me, but I end every episode, clowns to left me, jokers to the right, here I am stuck in the middle with you. Thanks everybody, that's Cooper Campbell. Clowns to the left of me.